and welcome to Building Your T-Shirt Empire. My name is Cole, and today we have a very special guest. It's Travis from the Print on Demand podcast. And before we get started, I wanted to let you know Shirt Agency is doing an exciting new thing where we're now offering DTF transfers that are going to go direct to you. They'll ship in 24 hours. The pricing is cheaper than Supercolor, cheaper than Ninja, and it also is one of the best peels I've ever seen. When we saw this new technology with the peel, we knew we wanted to be involved. So you can go to dtf.shirtagency.com and you can start buying transfers for as few as one transfer, or you could start buying hundreds. So we'd love to see you there. Check it out, dtf.shirtagency.com. So Travis, could you give us a quick little rundown about your kind of history in the industry and what it is you've been doing?
Sure. So I started selling on Amazon, just through like retail arbitrage, wholesale, private label, did all kinds of different things, would go to a Walmart and try to meet with the manager and buy stuff for 50% off clearance. And then I would literally send it all into Amazon FBA. I started that in 2014, imported a couple of products from China that sold really well. I did a burrito blanket and had a really cool, like, had three sizes of them and had really cool packaging. Those did really well. And during that time, we ended up starting a conference called the Rocky Mountain Reseller Conference. I'm in Denver area. And so we had, you know, 200-300 people from all over the country that were selling on Amazon. And during the second year, ran it for 3 years. During the second year of that conference, after hours in the bar, you know, where you get all the great ideas, I heard somebody talking about sublimating coffee mugs with a cheap Chinese press and a converted inkjet printer to use, put the sublimation dyes in. And so I decided to go ahead and jump in because I already knew how to create a listing on Amazon because I'd been doing it with my private label and my wholesale and things like that. So I started making.
What year was that?
That was 2017.
Oh, okay.
Not that long ago. I started doing that out of my basement and creating these listings, and they were just selling. And I was shocked, you know, because, you know, I was getting the mugs for super cheap, and there was a nice, healthy margin. And it really kind of supplemented some of the stuff that I was doing with the arbitrage and, you know, the private label and things like that. So fast forward, I eventually got a commercial space. We were doing a ton of mugs. I even got a mug oven. We were doing mugs for other people. Then we actually moved to a new larger facility. And I basically acquired a book of business and some equipment to do the book of business. So we ended up having, UV, laser engraving, embroidery, of course, sublimation, and DTG and vinyl. And we basically got all of this stuff. Yeah, it was just, now looking back on, I'm like, holy shit, I couldn't be an expert at anything because I had all of this stuff. So, so we did that. And then, last summer I actually closed the shop, let go of, you know, our employees, and, one of which my production manager, actually my son. So that was really hard. But it just, the main reason behind it was that, we had focused so much on fulfillment for other people, which is obviously at a wholesale margin, that we had backed off from focusing on our retail stuff, which was at a retail margin. So had I to do it over again, I probably wouldn't have bought all that equipment, but B, I would have focused more on our stuff and less on growing and, you know, trying to get more clients, which we did do, and our revenue did go up, but our margin shrank. And so I could see the writing on the wall. So when our lease came up last summer, I was kind of like, okay, we're out of this, we're done. I've since moved some of my equipment here. I still have like a laser engraver and a flat press and a bunch of mug presses and some different printers, a hat press. And then obviously I have connections with, screen printers and, you know, people that do embroidery for larger orders. So I still do some local stuff, and I actually do fulfill for a couple of clients on their, for their Etsy stores, but mainly we're focused on our products, which, you know, right now I have over 750,000 listings on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and that just keeps building. You know, every week we add, we have processes and I have virtual assistants that just add products every single week. So that's what our main focus is on. And then, well, that's what the business Make Your Mark Design's main focus is on. And then I also do the print on demand cast, which you alluded to in the intro with my buddy Josiah. And I've been doing a little bit more coaching and consulting with that, you know, helping people that want to do print on demand. Yeah, we've got 190 plus episodes on the show right now, and wow, been doing it for 3.5 years, and it's been a lot of fun. And that's how I got into speaking, you know, at some of the trade shows. I know that's kind of where we connected, the Impressions yeah. show and some of the other ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, tell me about 750,000 listings. Is just kind of mind boggling.
Yeah, a lot of those are variations, you know, so like five colors, six sizes, that's 30. So, but yes, still a lot.
But I mean, tell me about, what I've always seen with people that do brands, at least when you're talking about, you know, the traditional walks into a screen printing shop, wants to start a clothing brand. They walk in and they have 5-6 designs. They have no keyword searchability at all. They think it looks cool. It may or may not look cool. They don't necessarily have an audience and they don't have any sort of marketing strategy. How is it that you did it so much more successfully and so differently than that kind of like, here's some art I'm proud of, I'm going to print up some products. Whereas you were just like, we're going to go after what the market is searching for and actively just create things around, I'm assuming, keywords. I mean, how did you approach that? Yeah,
that's exactly it. You know, really in print on demand, there really are two main strategies. There's kind of the, well, actually there's three. I'll say, so the first one would be like uploading your art to a royalty based platform, like a Amazon Merch on Demand, which pays you a royalty. Mm-hmm. They take care of all the fulfillment and the processing and all that stuff. And then there's the seller of record, which would encompass the other two. And so the seller of record is, you know, I'm selling a physical product. I'm the actual seller of record. I might be using an Etsy as my platform or Amazon as my platform, but it's me who's selling it. I have to handle the returns. I have to make sure the customer's satisfied, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that seller of record kind of genre, you know, arena, there's really brand, you know, so I'm going to start a Shopify store. I'm going to push my brand out and I'm going to use print on demand to fulfill those products. You know, and there's other, obviously people do it with Wix and all that other stuff, but I think Shopify, we all know, is the king of the jungle when it comes to that. And so that's one way to go about using print on demand. The other way is kind of, it's almost like a spray and pray. And it really does come back to keywords, research, looking at what's selling. You know, on Amazon, they have a thing called BSR, which is bestseller rank. And so you can monitor that over time and see, you know, if this particular design or this product or this style of thing is actually in demand, you know, based on that bestseller rank. And so, I mean, it's a strategy that kind of encompasses a whole lot of different data points to then, you know, just create tons and tons of listings. So on Amazon, you have a listing, they have what's called an ASIN, which is their, it's kind of like their internal SKU, and every product, every variation of every product has an ASIN. And recently in the last year or so, they put these 2000 per week ASIN creation limits on, where we used to have a 250,000 ASIN limit creation. Unfortunately, we didn't have the systems in place to get to that 250,000 until right at the end. And we were able to upload a ton of t-shirts. And then all of a sudden we got hit with that 2000 a week creation, ASIN creation limit. And so it's slowed us down. We'd have, you know, millions by now easily, because of the systems that we've created with mocking up, using bulk mockup tools to like do thousands of mockups at a time. And, it's all spreadsheet stuff and really, really super exciting.
Well, tell me about that. I mean, is that kind of stuff, is that like proprietary, like a bulk mockup creation? If I could dump the week's orders into bulk mockup creation or whatever, have you guys built custom software tools? from the ground up, or are you paying for them?
I mean, this is kind of a gold nugget, but it's basically this program. It's basically just a Photoshop plugin, and it's called Bulk Mockup. And it's literally a couple of guys from the other side of the world have created it. They use Gumroad to like sell it. And they have a version 2, which is like a one-time fee. And then a version 3 that gives you a little more flexibility, but it's a monthly charge, but it's really reasonable. And I mean, we are using it, you know, with thousands a week of mockups. And so it's basically just, it's all local based, you know, and you put your folders, you know, you organize your folders and it pulls the mockup, you know, it has to have like a smart object in it. And then you can say, I want all of the 1,000 or 2,000 designs in this other folder put on that mockup. And then it just does it and then outputs them. And then what we do is we upload them to we use Wasabi, which is just an Amazon S3 skin, really. But they use sequential links. And so we are able to name our mockups with our SKUs. And we basically have all of these Excel formulas to really dial in the organizational process so we can literally do all these mockups and then do all the next mockups and then use our SKU and basically just drop it down and SKU everything, and everything's in a column. So we, you know, it's always matching up. So it's, it's all manual, but it's using a lot of different interesting tools that help us bulk create listings. Then we're creating all these listings on, you know, in spreadsheets for both. So I have like a master list, you know, spreadsheet that then I can grab columns and I can, you know, like upload to wish.com if I want to, you know, using their spreadsheet. And I just, it's different columns. Spot or Shopify has column or has the XLS uploader. Walmart obviously does. They're all a little different, but if you have kind of that master list, it makes it a lot easier. And then we categorize, you know, obviously them by product. So it makes it, you know, we can filter out what we want to upload that particular day.
So is that the main goal of the VAs, is to manage the uploads and maybe help write descriptions, or are the descriptions being auto-generated?
Yeah, we use ChatGPT for the descriptions. It's a Google Chrome plugin. You're probably familiar with it, where you can put a query in and then drop the list of, so we do have to name them. We have to give them basic names. I guess you're right. We have to do them names, and then we give them names that are nondescript. They don't have any product information in them. So if we want to add t-shirt or mug, we can do that. So we do have to name them. That's unfortunately, AI can't look at the thing and then give it a good name. You know, not yet anyway.
It has vision. I mean, now.
We might actually jump into that.
It might actually be able to do that, because I've done the vision as little tests, and it was able to tell me, like, this is a 3-color design of a old Chevy on a black t-shirt.
Yeah, we might be able to figure out a nice prompt.
Like, it can describe.
I wonder if you can do that in Google Sheets with a link.
Yeah, I mean, I know you can in Zapier. You can connect Google Sheets and ChatGPT together. And then besides that, there was this guy.
I have that because we use the Google Sheet thing we put our names in there, and then we use it for our keywords or our tags on Etsy or whatever.
But there was this guy who built something called Prompt Loop. And Prompt Loop was built into Google Sheets without using something like a Zapier. And so you, like, every single cell had like its own conversation ability.
That's what we're using, something like that.
Clone a column.
To do our keywords.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if.
So if the JPEGs were already in the cell, it could like look at it through API with the vision and then dump it in the next cell as like a first description. Yeah.
That would be pretty cool. I would love for it to actually, instead of, I just want it to go to a link and do it, you know, and look at the link and then create the title, because we're doing these mockups. And then obviously we also use bulk mockup for our art files, for actual, like, what we're going to print on the shirt or the mug or whatever. And so we could just put our art file in there, a link to the art file, and then say, title this, you know, and somehow, and then it would go in the perfect world to go out, look at the URL. I don't know. That seems challenging though, as opposed to just having it all in the spreadsheet to begin with.
Yeah. I just wonder, so let's say you've got everything uploaded. It goes to a fulfillment center. If you're not doing all the fulfillment mm-hmm. yourself anymore, how is it that you're giving them the properly sized artwork for every single SKU without potential issues? Are you doing a lot of manual work up front, making a bunch of variations that may never sell? Or are you just doing everything vector and then you dump only vectors to them? Like, what is it that
we're providing them? We're providing them a PNG transparent background in the required file size for the print. And so we understand on the shirt, you know, where it's going to go. And so we will drop it down. You know, if we don't manually place it, but we use bulk mockup. Hey, if we're doing t-shirt art files to output, here's where we want it to be placed in the bulk mockup. But, the mockup, if you will, it's not actually a mockup, is just a blank PNG, or it's just a blank background. And then we tell it where to place mockup where to place the art. So it's, you know, it's up higher on a, you know, like a 16x20 sized platen or whatever the specific dimensions are that our print vendor is requiring us to give them. So we run all of that through bulk mockup as well. And so I use a program called OrderDesk to capture all the orders. It integrates with Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, Shopify, Wix, I mean, everything. And it also has, on the back end, it has lots of integrations with a lot of print on demand suppliers. So in OrderDesk, we have an OrderDesk store that has all 750,000 or whatever lines of inventory. And so it has the SKU, the title, it has what the product is. It has the print vendor SKU also, because obviously they need to know what it is that they're printing it on. And then like a color, a size, and then a location. So I can send it to print vendor one for these set of SKUs, or I can send it to print vendor two for these set of SKUs. And so, and then when an order comes in, it matches the SKU automatically through rules. I call it my poor man's API, but through rules, it automatically sends it to the print vendor that is going to do that particular product. They produce, ship, and then the tracking uploads back through OrderDesk up to the channel. You know, if it's Amazon or Walmart or wherever, and then it's all over.
Yeah.
And it's all automatic.
Yeah.
You know, because it through the rules, it's like if it sees that SKU, it's going to go. Now, every once in a while, you know, something screws up and you have to go in and like find where the art is or something, but that's very rare. 99% of our products just flow right through.
Huh. So that means, I mean, one thing that, you know, you'll hear all screen printers try to say is that the DTG and even just transfers, like the quality's not there. And if you're trying to build a brand, you need to have like the high quality printing. So how do you approach kind of like capturing these customers and holding on to them from a brand basis versus just this is basically like a disposable funny product, so my brand doesn't even matter? Do you treat it like here's my brand and I want to capture them and have them be returning customers? Or do you treat it as I just want as many designs out there as possible. I want to grab any trend and I don't really care about like the washability, for example.
So there's kind of two answers to that. So technically it's Amazon's customer and they're not going to let me capture their email or remarket to them because it's their customer. Same thing with Walmart. Etsy's a little more lax on that. Some people you'll find they'll even have like a link to, you know, their website, not their website, but like a lead capture or something on their listings. You can get away with it if you put like an insert in your packaging. You can, you know, have your vendor print out something and for an extra fee, they'll put something in there and then you might get some people taking advantage of the 10% off or whatever. But I don't think of those listings honestly as a brand. I do, however, have a Shopify store that I do have like a, it's kind of a mix of niches, and I run it, like I'm getting ready to turn it back on for, and add some more products for Father's Day. It really does well during holiday and gift giving time, specifically for men. That I do treat more like a brand. And it's, you know, it's a branded website. It's got, you know, all of the stuff on it that you would think with a brand. So I kind of do both. And, I do actually have a whole, set of products that sell really well. That is a brand that is, it's nowhere to be found except on Amazon, Walmart. And sometimes I'll get like, it's basically, it's kind of a church related niche where people will like take a class, and then like the main person from the class will order, you know, a mug for everybody in the class. And so I'll get, you know, every once in a while I'll get, you know, 25, 40, you know, at $24.99 for these mugs. And I'm like, you know, you could have called me. I would have given you a better deal, but I'm not going to, you know, shake my head. So that could also be considered a brand. But again, I don't run it like a brand. I should honestly put that one on Shopify as well and start driving traffic, because I think that there is a market for that. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like I say, you can go those two different directions. You can just throw everything on a marketplace and just let the data and what's popular and the trends. Like back several years ago, it was Valentine's Day, or coming up on Valentine's Day, and I did a coffee mug with Trump on it. It was like a cartoon picture of Trump, and then it had these hearts, and then it had a wall, and it said, you know, I want you on my side of the wall, you know. And it was hilarious, and it sold a ton because it was kind of, it wasn't a brand, but it basically took that trend of the wall and all of that and combined it with another trend, which was Valentine's Day, and it did really well. So that's really the secret sauce, I guess, of the spray and pray method, if you want to call it that.
So spray and pray. I mean, you've really automated how you're uploading. So you're really, really spraying. But most people that would start this, they'd like put up 12 listings, make like one sale in
and be done.
40 days, completely abandon it, and it's over, you know? And they might try really hard on those 12 listings, but it's just completely dead random art sitting in a infinite field. So are you spending money on like Amazon advertising, or are you like, how are you marketing it? How are you having anyone even know it exists? Like that Trump mug, even though it might be a funny idea, like how did you even get the first 100 eyeballs on it? So that it starts getting fed through the algorithm.
For the most part, I do, like a campaign for $5 a day, and I just dump, and it's an auto campaign. And I dump every, like I separate it by product. So like I have one for mugs, and then maybe inside of there I have, you know, Mother's Day products, Valentine's Day products, and I maybe boost some of the per click. But I'm talking like normally they're like, it's like 12 cents a click, $5 a day for every product I have. And so it hardly ever.
$5 per, per product, or
for the whole campaign. Just for the whole campaign. And it, because it's so long tail and I'm bidding so low, I'm only getting things that like nobody else has thought of, you know, like, or just a super, super long tail, result. And so I'm not appearing in a, you know, a lot of searches, but they are appearing because there's so many of them. And I might have, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 different plant lover coffee mugs, you know, or designs that are on coffee mugs. So I might come up in different searches for different things, but just low, low cost per click, low daily spend, seems to allow me to absorb the cost of advertising as well as the cost of sales, on Amazon. Cause they're charging me 15% right off the top, just for the market. I mean, that's their fee. If I want to do FBA and actually send products in, then I've also got the inbound shipping. I've got the pick and pack fees and all that, plus that 15%. So, they keep raising those rates too, man. Amazon is, I'm not going to badmouth them, except Maybe I should. Or no, I'm trying to be witty here and it's not coming off. So I'm just going to say Amazon sucks.
Yeah.
They really do. And they are using it.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing that I experienced in our time at Shirt Agency, one of our first big clients, he got to the point of doing like $3 million in gross sales a year. Doing like country shirts, and the country shirts were like big fonts, 2-3 colors. And he screen printed them with us because we were selling them to him for like $5, maybe $5.50. And then he would still sell it for $20-$25 retail. But he just had a knockoff city. So he actually had the volume where the screen printing made sense as opposed to committing to all the print on demand stuff. But the knockoffs just weren't defended in any way. And with you doing things like, you know, a white sublimated mug or a black T-shirt with a DTG on it, do you see your best sellers getting knocked off so fast that they're only a best seller for 1 month? Or you just kind of have to like let it get burned and not care?
And that's why we do 2,000 a week, because that's bound to happen. You know, I mean, it's just it'll even happen. It'll even happen for brands. Luckily, those brands are probably on Shopify and no one else is going to like be on that platform, you know, or that sales channel with them. But you could probably find a lot of those brands merchandise on the Amazons and the Etsys and, you know, of the world. But yeah, I mean, that's something you just have to kind of deal with. I mean, but you can negotiate your pricing to where like, for instance, I was just going to say, you know, like a Bella 3001. We have a negotiated price for the small through XL of $8.32, you know, plus printed plus shipping. Yeah. So just a one side. And that's because of the fact that we're doing bulk. We don't really mess with extra print placements. And if I was doing a brand or, you know, wanted to get serious about that, we might start doing some sleeves or even some neck tags or something like that. But for right now,
whoever's doing that's not making much. Whoever's doing your DTG, I mean,
why do you think
their ink cost is getting close to $2? Yeah. If their ink cost is getting close to $2, depending on their quality level,
it wouldn't be $2. Not anymore. I mean, I was using.
You don't think with pre-treat and ink cost?
I was in for pre-treat and ink. I was under a dollar with my. I had Epson SureColor F3070s. I had two of them. And you can do a full print for less than a buck of ink. And most of our stuff wasn't that big. Okay. But I mean, your point is valid, though. I mean, obviously, it depends on what machines they're printing them on.
They could maybe make $3 or something. Then they have labor.
Overhead.
They have whatever.
That's why I'm sitting here at my house instead of at my shop.
So if they're doing, if they're doing 1,000 DTGs a day, they really aren't making that much money, even though it's a lot of labor.
Exactly. Yeah. And you got to dial your processes in, obviously, and get lean and all of that stuff to make it work in at those rates. But I mean, when I was selling, my Bella Canvas 3001 was $13 printed and I had plenty of customers that were selling them. So, you can find good pricing. But I think we were kind of that small shop that you could actually pick up a phone and talk to somebody and, you know, pull an order in the middle of production or something if you needed to. So we kind of went above and beyond, which allowed us to kind of justify charging those prices.
Yeah. And so do you find as far, like, let's talk about blanks a little. Do you find that when you're doing something that is kind of a gimmicky shirt or just kind of like a trend shirt, is there any reason to do more than like a ring spun, maybe like a Gildan Soft style? Or, I mean, is quality really matter at that point?
Yeah, I depends on your sales channel. I think on Etsy, you might be better doing a little. In fact, we do all Bellas now on Etsy. But even Bella's in this kind of oversized trend that we're seeing right now, Bella's are kind of like, it was too thin. It was, you know, because they're all used to comfort colors or even freaking Gildan 5000 or something. But so when I was running my fulfillment place, I like the way the soft Gildan Soft Style 64,000 prints with DTG. It actually, to me, I know everyone says Bella's the end all be all, but I think the Gildan prints better, at least with our Epson, and maybe it was our pre-treat. I mean, there's so many different things that go into print on demand.
Yeah.
So that was our main. And then, so we had kind of like a standard unisex, and then we had a premium unisex, which was a 3001. So, and then if we couldn't get a specific color, we'd, you know, do like a next level 3600 or something like that. But now I'm actually getting ready to launch a whole bunch of comfort colors, because that's obviously super popular right now. And I found a place that's I can get them to a customer, a one-off shirt in about 5 to 6 days, for like $15.50 shipped. Which is, to me, that's pretty dang good for a one-off. You know, I don't think you're going to find that on like the Printifies and the Printfuls of the world. So looking at doing some of that.
We can talk about that after, because there's some stuff that we're working on with some other print-on-demand people that we might be able to see what that would do.
Okay.
But yeah, what do you think about how people are kind of switching from the DTG to the DTF? Because does that really affect you, or you just don't care? Like, you just need the shirt to show up on time. You don't care how they did it.
Exactly. I mean, the bottom line is that. I mean, I prefer the hand of a DTG, of a good DTG shirt, but I recognize the labor savings in DTF, you know, and even probably material savings, because you don't have pre-treat. But I, you know, on a big, big print, I still feel, even good DTF still feels a little plasticky to me. And I'm not digging it quite as much as everybody else is, because it's going on top of the shirt. There's nothing that's actually going into the shirt. You know, the ink's not going into those fibers really, or paint or deck. It's just sitting on top. So it feels a little stickerish still. But to your point, yes, I don't care how they do it. I just want them to deliver the shirt on time.
Yeah. I mean, especially if a lot of your art is like font-based or whatever. So I just saw a crazy product from Ninja Print House, or whatever they're called now, Ninja Transfers. They're doing a no-heat transfer that literally is just a sticker, but it's dishwashable. So you can just sticker it onto like a mug.
UV transfer?
It's completely permanently there. It's just some sort of like great adhesive. And then that's what they're selling now, is like no heat press, no nothing. And you just apply it, and they're saying that it'll hold up to dishwasher.
Yeah,
so that'll be interesting to see people like not even use presses.
The UV DTF, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's what they're doing. I was just looking at some of their ads, and it was...
You can do
crazy.
Yeah, you can use them as stickers, or you can, like you say, you can use them on a coffee mug or whatever. Yeah, I saw some of that stuff at the Impressions show this year in Long Beach. Cobra Flex was doing it. They had a machine that was doing it, and then a couple other ones did too. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's just different glue. That's probably the only secret to it. So in other new advancements besides like the DTF thing, how are you handling this influx of AI art? And as it gets better and better, are you just going to use it, or are you feeling like it's going to flood the market so badly that it'll affect your sales?
I definitely do think more and more competition on these marketplaces for sure. So my current position is pivoting towards the podcast, you know, doing more coaching and consulting simultaneously with our business and with our, my VAs, and basically they're running that part of it. And then I just kind of pop in, have weekly meetings with them and give them direction and stuff. And then we, you know, chat throughout the week. But with that, I am looking at focusing more on like some Shopify solutions, and, you know, like branded type things, to kind of mitigate against this flood of new products that are coming in. Now, I mean, luckily most of those people are you know, their mom and pop, or they're, you know, just hobbyists, and they're manually creating listings for every single thing, you know. So we do have kind of an advantage as far as like speed to market, I guess, or even just sheer number of or internet real estate, I guess, you know, where our stuff is. So that's that keeps us at least making money. But I have seen the sales go down as more and more people, especially in 2020 when everybody was locked up, you know, that whole crafting community, you know, Cricut has made it super easy for anybody to make a one-off product. And so a lot of people came online during that time, and it's made it a lot more competitive. So, yeah, I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, but I'm not a big fan of AI art, honestly. At least some of it. It still feels a bit cartoony, and I know it's getting better and better every day, but I mean, if you show me 10 products, I can, you know, with 75% accuracy, I'll say I can pick out the ones that are AI and ones that aren't. And I bet you could too. Mm-hmm. I know that's going to change over time, and I think they're going to continue to get better and better. I have nothing against it necessarily.
Yeah.
And we'll use it. I don't really, what I see a lot of people doing is using AI art to create their mock-ups, and or like the person that they're going to put the shirt or put the shirt on, or, you know, change the color or whatever and put the design on. And I don't like it. It's too, they're too shiny, happy people. You know, I want a regular person, you know, on my, for my mock-up. So I don't think it's quite there yet, but I know that there's probably a ton of people listening going, no, it's there, Travis. You're just, you're not seeing what I'm seeing, or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of in the prompting. Like we've done some AI art that went into production, and like no one called us out on it. Nobody said, hey, this is just AI. They just ended up liking the shirt. And one of them, we did like 4,000 units of it.
Yeah.
And it was 90% AI, and the last 10% was basically cleanup and finalizing it. But nobody called us out on it at all. So, and also maybe a bunch of you listening already have it, 'cause it was a giveaway. we've definitely had like moments where AI has worked really well, and the prompting is a big part of it. That being said, I definitely know what you mean, that kind of like overly shiny, perfect AI look that you do have to kind of work against. And there's an interesting new programs that are all kind of competing with each other. Like I've been trying Ideogram, which isn't OpenAI and isn't
Midjourney. But it does great text.
And that one seems to be, it's really good with text. Yeah. And I'm waiting for somebody to come out with one that's just like a straight vector base. I know that Illustrator's trying to do it, but theirs is still janky. But when you can output vector AIs instead of these like low res JPEGs, that'll be a really helpful. But yeah, I just kind of wonder where people will differentiate themselves. Because if you want like rock and roll t-shirt with a skull and flames, it can bump out like 100 variations in moments. Or you could have an illustration guy try really hard and he'll give you one option. So it's just kind of changing the game
or
a lot.
Or you can use that AI and get, you know, 100 different ones and go, oh, I really like this. Here, AI guy, here's what I want you to basically take and make better. And I think that's kind of the best, the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's kind of what I've seen people do. It's kind of a good way to do your opening conversation with a customer and then switch it over.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the consulting and kind of what that looks like, because we've had people talk to us at shows or whatever, and they're like, oh, how do you help us out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always kind of like, I don't know. I talk every week, but I don't really know what it is a consultant offers. So like when you do create like a consulting relationship with a customer, what is it that you're trying to achieve with them? What is it that you're trying to give them for their money?
So it really depends. Obviously it depends on where they're at. 'Cause I've done consulting for people that want to, you know, they want to start an Etsy store, for example, and that's all they want to do. They just want to get their products up on Etsy. And I have kind of a, I have some, I don't know, I wouldn't call them secret, but I have some launch strategy strategies behind that and kind of coach them through how to get their listings ready to then launch and to basically take advantage of the Etsy algorithm in the best way possible. Cause there is a, there's like a new seller bump when you launch products or a new product bump, I guess. And so if you can take advantage of that by, you know, you incorporating all the things, you know, like loss leaders and you know, email marketing you can do on Etsy, you know, so we're just talking through a lot of that, and I'm looking at their art and I'm giving them, you know, good feedback, at least I hope it's good. And then just talking through how to set up their listings. And then other people, you know, they're doing a brand. I have another guy who was in the reptile niche and does all these like shows where he takes reptiles out, and he actually has a DTF printer in his house, and he was doing shirts for some of his other friends. And I was like, and he wanted to put these things on his website. He also has like 3D printers where he prints little lizards and crap like that for sale, and he takes them to these places, and he basically built a website. I basically helped him. He built the website, but I helped him kind of get to this idea of how do we, what if you had relationships with all of these other reptile enthusiasts and influencers, because he knows all these people that have like a million YouTube subscribers to their reptile YouTube. Why don't you design for these other people, bring them all in, and set up an affiliate network between all of them? So if John refers somebody and they end up buying something for you, you're paying an affiliate to John. You know, I mean, just all of that stuff. And so we looked at all that. We kind of dug into the back end and set it up with a couple of his first affiliates, and he's off to the races. So it really depends on what that particular. So there's a brainstorming session. We do a discovery call, and then on the discovery call, I might give a couple of like free pointers, but then I'm like, if you want to take this to the next level, you know, there's, if you want to kick this thing up a notch, well, here's what I offer. And usually I do like a two-week, four-week package where we meet once a week, for like 45 minutes. And then they have like access to me through Voxer. It's a chat app. And, and then I provide them with any templates. Like one guy wanted to basically just he wanted to scale on his Amazon account, and I'm like, oh, well, I know how to do that. So I'm giving him templates and things like that to help him build out that kind of master listing sheet that he can then use on the different platforms and all of that. And then we're talking through all of that. And, you know, so it is definitely client dependent. There's no one size fits all when it comes to print on demand.
So tell people how they can find you, how they can get in contact with you, and then we'll wrap it all up.
You can check out our website, just printondemandcast.com. There's a contact page on there. If you want to, you know, hit me up, you can do info@printondemandcast.com. And we've got a Facebook group. We're on Instagram. We're, you know, all of our shows are on all of the regular podcast places. And just search Print On Demand Cast. You can find us, and happy to answer any questions or help you out. If you know, want to reach out, hit a DM on Insta or whatever, let me know.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Travis. And everyone check out our new DTF option, the DTF.shirtagency.com. These transfers really are great. They don't have the issues with peeling that you've had with some of the other hot peels you've tried. And we are cheaper than the competition at the moment. So until we start doing about 1,000 orders a day with it, we're going to beat everyone's prices. So definitely check out DTF.shirtagency.com. And then thanks so much for watching and listening. Like, subscribe, and tell your mom about us. All right. Bye, guys.